You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. I wasn't really planning on doing a post-game show tonight. I was thinking with tomorrow being an off day, I'd wait until then. But I know nobody wants to linger with San Antonio fresh on their minds. I didn't want that to be my last show, and clearly the Rockets did not want that to be their last game. They got it out of their system in a big way on Wednesday night. We'll get to the recap in just a minute. For now, I want to acknowledge our sponsors at SeatGeek. They're bringing you today's show. Use the promo code LORockets and you can get a $20 rebate off of your first ticket purchase from SeatGeek. Now, in Wednesday night's game, the Rockets were 125-111 winners over Phoenix. It was hairy for a while. It was close, really, until about midway through the third quarter, but the Rockets were able to get some serious separation when it mattered. Eric Gordon shot 7 of 13 from behind the arc, all of those in the final three quarters. And the Rockets, a night after shooting just 15%, shot 47% from behind the arc and were able to beat the Suns with ease. And it's not easy to do that in the NBA. I'll point out, to show you a comparison, tonight, the Jazz lost at home to the Sacramento Kings on the second night of a back-to-back. That kind of travel is brutal. Now, the one good thing for the Rockets, I've said before, and I think it's true, when you have a team that is built around outside shooting, that's one of the things that travels. Even if your legs are a little bit tired, if you're set, you can make threes, whereas a team that's a little more dependent on defense, scrambling, rebounding, I think that's a little bit harder to do on the second night of a back-to-back, whereas a team that makes a lot of threes, well, you know, you can survive some of the travel issues that plague a lot of teams around the NBA. Now, the one downside to it, you could easily say the Rockets, they shot 47% tonight. If they had shot even 18% a night ago and gone 7 of 38, they would have beaten the Spurs and would probably have a 12-game winning streak by now. But you can play the what-if a lot, just as the Rockets could have won that Spurs game. They could have easily lost the Minnesota game or the Boston game, and the streak would never be a thing. At the end of the day, the Rockets are now 22-8 on the year. They've won 11 of 12 games in December. The number three seed in the Western Conference, and I think you have to feel very good about where this basketball team is at. I said in the closing seconds of that game, this was a rare circumstance in which I actually liked the back-to-back. A lot of times in the NBA, the travel, yes, it's extensive. They should probably either play fewer than 82 games or stretch out the season a bit more so there aren't as many. But really, I've played the game before. Not at an NBA level, obviously, but, you know, I played basketball. And when you have a brutal loss, like what happened to the Rockets on Tuesday night, the thing you want to do is get back on the court as quickly as possible and put it behind you. You want to just embarrass someone, go out and change the narrative to something else. And thankfully, that's what this back-to-back allowed the Rockets to do. Just 24 hours later, they took out their frustrations on the Suns. And now, I'm not going to say that game's forgotten. Clearly, it sticks around. But it's not going to fester the way it would if you had 2 or 3 days off with nothing going on other than a practice, a shoot-around, and you're just sitting there thinking about it. This allows the Rockets to change the narrative a little bit and have a much more positive frame of mind as they get ready for another big game in Memphis on Friday night. Now, looking at the individual stats from Wednesday night's game, again, 125-111 win over the Suns. You start with James Harden. 27 points, 14 assists, only 2 turnovers. 14 assists to 2 turnovers, that's a great ratio. I saw people pointing out during the game that Harden has really limited his turnovers lately. That's a great sign. The thing that I was really pleased with James on Wednesday night, he seemed to have a good sense for when to pick his spots. He had double-digit assists by halftime. He was in facilitator mode early, but late in the third and the fourth quarter, when it seemed like the Suns were actually starting to make a push and the Rockets needed to get separation, then he got more engaged. He got more focused on being a scorer. And I thought it was the perfect balance. Early in the game, he got other people involved, but when they really needed him, he stepped up, and he was 8 of 18, but he was also 5 of 11 from behind the arc. So after seeing him go 1 of 11 against the Spurs, pretty clear it's a one-off. Same thing with Gordon, noted that he was 1 of 8 against the Spurs. Tonight he was 7 of 13. So it goes to show you, there's no real formula to slowing the Rockets. If there was, a lot of teams would do it. It just so happened that they lost against the Spurs because, well, Harden and Gordon had a lot of their usual threes, and they just missed them. Thankfully, Wednesday night, they made them, and this was the kind of Rockets that we're used to seeing, scored 125 points. Now, it helps that the Suns are not a great interior defensive team. I don't think there was a big difference in terms of three-point defense from the Spurs on Tuesday night to the Suns on Wednesday night. The Rockets just made their shots. I did think James was a little more aggressive going to the rim in the second half, and that helped. But by and large, it's just a game of making shots, and the Rockets did a better job of that on Wednesday night. I should also point out Pat Beverly tonight. He was 7-11, 2 of 3 from behind the arc, almost at a triple-double, 18 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. I thought it was great to see him get his stroke going the last couple of games. Pat did struggle from the field. I thought tonight there was a clear emphasis by Pat to get better shots. He attacked the rim when he could, but he passed up a couple of decent threes to make sure and get himself in perfect rhythm, and you could see his confidence get going. And then Ryan Anderson, he started slow, 2 of 7 from the field, finished 5 of 10, made his last 3 shots, 15 points in his 28 minutes, 50% shooting. That's that new hashtag, Road Ryan. And I know we'd love it if he got going more at Toyota Center, but really, I love the lift that he gives them on the road, because it seems like a lot of these road games, the Rockets have so many guys, you know, your Montrezl Harrell types, even Pat Beverly, dependent on energy, those guys always seem to be a little bit bigger factors at home. So to see a guy that gets going on the road, especially early in games, it's kind of like the J.J. Redick effect with the Clippers. We've all seen how J.J. in the first and third quarters can get the Clippers off to really good starts, and I feel like it's, at least on the road, that's the kind of lift that Ryan is starting to give the Rockets. And it took him a little bit of time tonight, but in the third quarter, he got it going. That's a big part of how the Rockets are finally able to start getting some separation. Now, I haven't talked about the centers yet, and there's a reason. That's my rant for the back half of the show. I wanted to start off talking about the headliners, which was obviously James Harden, and then a plus shooting night for the likes of Pat Beverly, Eric Gordon, and Ryan Anderson. We'll get to the centers in just a moment. For now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our wonderful sponsors at SeatGeek, because the NBA season is in full force, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games that you want to see up close and in person this year. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for a terrific value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house. They grade every ticket from 1 to 100, and so wherever you want to sit, courtside, lower level, club seats, upper level, you can get a great deal, the most bang for your buck. The Rockets have a couple of big-time games over this holiday period. They're home the day after Christmas against the Suns. They've got games on the 30th and 31st against the Clippers and the New York Knicks, both on the weekend, the latter on New Year's Eve. A lot of marquee games. If you want to get tickets, you guys know I'm a big proponent of the secondary market, where you can buy from season ticket holders at a lower rate. And from those sites, SeatGeek, to me, is by far where you get the best deal. Now, the best part of this, my listeners, you guys get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. To get it, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So jumping back into the show, this is Wednesday night, Rockets 125-111 winners over the Phoenix Suns. Rockets now 22-8 on the year, 11-1 in December. We touched on the great shooting earlier. Rockets were 18 of 38 tonight from three. That's a huge improvement from 6 of 38, which they were on Tuesday night in the close loss to San Antonio. And so making 12 more threes and the same number of shots, well, that'll obviously account for a lot of the improvement. Beyond that, I want to give credit to the guys in the middle. Montrezl Harrell was plus 10, had 17 points in his 28 minutes. Nene in his 18 minutes, 12 points, 5 of 6 shooting, plus 5. So combined, they were plus 15, 29 points on 13 of 17 shooting. That's extremely efficient. They didn't rebound as well as you would like, combined 4 rebounds in what, their 46 minutes. So you'd like to get a little bit better there. But the Rockets have been using a little bit more of a team rebounding approach lately anyway. Give a lot of credit to Sam Decker, who has been relentless on the glass these past few games, especially, and that's helped the Rockets, even in the absence of Clint Capella, to hold their own. The real reason I wanted to point this out, I'm seeing a lot of folks, or at least early in the Phoenix game, before the Rockets got some real separation, who seem to be trying to blame everything, any struggles at all, on the absence of Clint Capella. And I saw the shade thrown, not just at me, but a little bit at me, saying, oh, Clint Capella, you know, people said he was only a 20 minutes per game player. No, that's what he was in December. He averaged 21 minutes per game. And the fact of the matter is, the Rockets were losing by 13 points in Minnesota when Capella exited with his injury. That was the second night of a back-to-back, a similar circumstance to what happened Wednesday night in Phoenix. The fact of the matter is, there are no easy games in the NBA. Every opponent is capable of beating you on a given night. And so especially if you play a team in the second night of a back-to-back and maybe your energy's a little bit low, and then if your grade is only based on a half of the game, then, yeah, you can make any player look good or bad, especially if you kind of twist it to fit the narrative. The fact of the matter is, we've had two games through. The Rockets more than held their own Wednesday night against the Suns. And what happened against the Spurs, quite frankly, the Rockets, they lost to the Spurs because of the threes. Other than the threes, which Clint Capella has nothing to do with, the Rockets outplayed the Spurs in every facet of the game. They actually significantly out-rebounded the Spurs, 51-43, I think, despite the Rockets being a smaller team and not having the length. Now, I'm not saying this because I don't like Clint Capella. Quite the contrary, I love the guy. He's a great interview, incredibly classy and nice guy, works his butt off. What I'm saying is there's a tendency among a lot of NBA fans, people want the easy explanation. And so if something doesn't go their way, they want the one thing that they can blame. And so through 1.5 games, the Rockets lost against San Antonio, and they were struggling a little bit more than people expected with Phoenix through the first half of the game. The one thing that was new, well, they were missing a rotation player, a starter in Clint Capella, that had been there for really the Rockets' entire, 21-7 start to the year. So people tried to twist everything to fit that narrative. The fact of the matter is, there's so much ebb and flow. If you look at anything, and you blow, one half or 1.5 games out of proportion, you can make any player, even James Harden, look bad if you want, or quite frankly, look good. You can find a couple of games of the year and make it seem like KJ McDaniels is a clear rotation player. The fact of the matter is, you have to give it some time, and in this case, you look at the results. I'm not saying the Rockets aren't going to feel Capella's absence. In some ways, they have. I think one of the clear areas where they missed him, I think Montrezl Harrell's done a good job, but I think it was a clear game where they would have loved to have had Montrezl Harrell as an energy guy, as that third center off the bench, whereas now that he has to start in place of Capella, and we'll get to that in a second. I thought that was a smart move by Mike D'Antoni. But because you have Harrell basically filling Capella's shoes, you don't have Harrell in that super energy role coming off the bench, maybe even behind Nene, and so you don't get that lift the way you had from Harrell, say, in Denver earlier this month on the second night of a road back-to-back. But to get back to the Capella thing, there's a lot of people who, people don't want to accept that there's a lot of randomness. But the fact is, there is. Every game is 1 out of 82. And there's a reason that there's an 82-game season. There's a reason that in the playoffs you have to play a best of 7. Because when you look at any one or two games, you can, anything can happen. The sport is way too random. You have to have a larger sample size. So when you look at this, and this is not a conclusive sample size to say that the Rockets won't miss Clint Capella either. All I'm saying is don't blow the narrative out of proportion. Yes, it'd be great if Clint Capella was healthy. No, that doesn't mean we can blame everything on his absence. The Rockets really did a great job on everything Tuesday night against the Spurs, except for threes. That had nothing to do with Clint Capella. They just missed a lot of open threes. Wednesday night, Harrell and Nene played relatively well, especially on the offensive end of the floor. They got a comfortable win. Again, I'm not saying they're fine without Clint Capella. I love having him out there. I'm just saying be cautious of the narrative, because I think there's a lot of people, whenever something goes wrong, they just want an easy explanation. They started 21-7, and if the Rockets lose a game or two, people are just going to say, well, Capella's out, because that's easy to say. Fact of the matter is, there's going to be a lot of ebb and flow over the course of an 82-game season, and even with Capella, Rockets probably should have lost that game at Minnesota. They could have easily lost the Brooklyn game when Capella just got overwhelmed by Brook Lopez. They could have lost the Boston game when the Rockets and Mike D'Antoni felt compelled to close with Montrezl Harrell at center because they weren't really getting enough from Clint Capella. They just had some good bounces. And maybe they'll have a few bad bounces in Capella's absence, just as they did against the Spurs when they somehow shot 6 of 38 from 3. That stuff happens. All I'm telling you guys is just don't look at everything through a narrative. Look at it as objectively as you can. I'd like Clint Capella to be here. He's a good player, but he's not the reason they lost against San Antonio, and he's also not the reason they got off to a little bit of a sluggish start against Phoenix. It'd be nice if they had him, but let's not blow it out of proportion. Fact of the matter is, he's a rotation player. They're trying to replace him, and it's not going to be easy, but this is not like losing James Harden either. Let's just keep the entire thing in perspective. And right now, they're 1-1 without Capella, and really, they should be 2-0 if anybody had made one more three, if the Rockets even shot 7 of 38 from three against the Spurs. But we all know how that story goes, and there's no point to keep beating that dead horse. Last thing on the center rotation I want to point out, Rockets made a clear change. They started Montrezl Harrell instead of Nene at center tonight. That was Mike D'Antoni's call before the game. Didn't announce it until an hour before. Really, I hope they do that. The thing is, Harrell plays, tried to call him Ka-Harrell, but Montrez, his style is obviously closest to Clint. Nene is a very different breed, and in game one, it was obvious the Rockets were trying to get Montrez into the game early in the first and third quarters anyway. If you're going to do that, you may as well just play the guy that's closest to Clint with the starters. That way, it's the least disruption for the starters, and it's the least disruption whenever Clint comes back in a month. Nene's grown comfortable in that bench role. This season is all about guys becoming more comfortable in their roles relative to a year ago, and I don't see any reason to take Nene out of his role, especially if you're going to play Montrezl Harrell more minutes anyway, because it seems like the Rockets do recognize they want to keep Nene capped at about 20, 25 minutes per game at the most, but really the last two nights, Nene's just played 18 minutes. So it's pretty clear they recognize there's a minutes limitation. So if you're going to play Montrezl Harrell more and his style is more similar to Capella, there's no real point to start Nene. Maybe if you were planning on playing Nene more minutes, I could see trying to steal Nene a few minutes at the start of the first and third. But if Nene is going to be capped as an 18 to 22 minutes per game guy, just bring him off the bench. Keep him in the same role. Harrell's most similar to Capella. It keeps everybody in the roles which they're comfortable with. I'm not going to say that Harrell is as good of a lob finisher as Clint Capella is, because he's not. But he at least gives you some of that same athletic dimension. And really, it's just easiest because Clint Capella, this isn't a season-ending injury. He's going to be back in a month. So I thought this was a nice move by Mike D'Antoni. I get why they started Nene in game one. He's a veteran. You want to kind of have some deference to that. And I think especially against the Spurs, who start Pau Gasol at center, a very slow guy, maybe that was a Nene favorable matchup. But by and large, the easiest thing for the Rockets to do is slide Montrezl Harrell in as their Capella light. Now, I'm not saying he's going to fully replace Clint Capella, but he can do a lot of the same things that Clint does. You can keep Nene in the role at which he's comfortable, and you can do a lot of the same things offensively that you could with Clint Capella out there. So it's not fully replacing him, but I think it's the best way they can navigate through this month while Clint Capella, you know, rehabs. Well, it's not rehabs. He rests from his broken fibula for a couple of weeks, and then he'll start his rehab in January, and hopefully by middle to latter stages of the month, he'll be back. For now, looks like the Rockets are turning Montrezl Harrell at center, and at least against most teams, I think that's the right move. Nene is a little bit more physical. He's a tiny bit taller, but by and large, with most NBA teams, it's not about that. It's just about leaping ability. It's about quickness. And I think Montrezl Harrell gives you the best option. Also, a lot of it's just about minutes. And if you play a guy early in the first and third, minutes are going to rack up easy, even if they aren't necessarily the deciding moments of the game. That's how you can get to 25, 30 minutes in a hurry. And if you want to, you know, accidentally play a guy 25 or 30 minutes, you'd rather it be Harrell and not Nene. Because Nene, you play him 25 or 30 minutes, there's a point of diminishing returns, and you're also going to have some concerns with him breaking down. Anyway, on that note, I will wrap up this show. Again, thanks to all of you guys for listening. I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets. You can also email the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions or suggestions for me, or if you would like to inquire about becoming a potential sponsor of this program, just as SeatGeek was today. Remember, if you use that promo code LORockets, my listeners can get a $20 rebate off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. It'll come in the mail after you've made that purchase. It's LO Rockets. Once again, happy final. Rockets 125, Suns 111. Rockets now 22-8 on the year, 11-2 in December, number 3 seed in the West. They're back at it Friday night with a huge game in Memphis, another rival contender in the Western Conference. And I'll be chatting with you guys again then. For now, have a good night.